When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Here we go. Hello and welcome along to episode 127 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley, and straight away, let's kill this music, because I think this is actually what we require. DC's doing the dance to this. You well, mate?
Very well, yes.
Good. Carl McQueen's back.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Here we go, then. It all comes down to this. The Great Escape. There we go. He's doing the trombone thing. So we're going to the last weekend of the season with 12 Football League clubs dreaming of the Great Escape.
This is far too jolly for the situations that some of the teams
is,
to find
really?
Themselves in.
Well, let's get rid of it. Saturday, the 3rd of May, I think Survival Saturday, as we're contractually allowed, required to describe it as, this Saturday. So I thought we'd maybe come up with some phrases and things to look out for last day of the season. I'm going to start us off with being in the ground and a fake score doing the rounds. Everyone going up saying there's been a goal somewhere, yeah. And then everyone checking saying there's definitely not been a goal somewhere. So some world-class time wasting I was thinking of. Jimmy Huddersfield and Barnsley on the last day of last season.
Yes.
Anything else you can think of?
But it's a shame Stevenage already gone down, I suppose.
Jimmy Glass.
If there's a goal in injury time, then the pitch invasion will begin. But, getting the players, getting the fans off the pitch, so they're all lined up behind the stewards to actually do the proper pitch invasion if and when the result is confirmed is always
that's another way of time wasting,
of the last
I suppose.
Day. Yeah.
References to Marcelo Trotter will be definitely doing the rounds.
Doing a Doncaster or doing a Watford. Any penalties given in the last 5 minutes. Get ready to get back down the other end, lads.
Right, so all to look forward to this weekend. If you've got any more last day cliches, I suppose, at Wagyu Podcast, get in touch on Twitter.
Transistor radios, are they still a thing?
Yeah, I was going to think, are they still on, transistor radios?
Well, the signal in the grounds on Twitter is something so bad.
Yeah.
Probably the best way to go sometimes.
Right, so we've got a hell of a show for you today then. We're going to be looking at the PFA teams of the year later. We'll be analysing the battle for those final two championship playoff places and paying tribute to Super Kevin Phillips as he finally announces his retirement age 40 plus. Another soon-to-be award-winning edition, we hope, of My Club. Also, we'll doff our caps to Paul Keith Hill and Paul Wilcox, Russ Wilcox, as Chesterfield, Rochdale and Scunthorpe are all promoted to League One, plus his reaction to the relegations of Yeovil, Barnsley, Shrewsbury and Torquay, all of which were confirmed over the weekend. But it is relegation, the Great Escape, that will dominate the bulk of the show. In League Two, Wickham are facing Football League oblivion after losing 2-1 at home to Bristol Rovers. Both Rovers and Northampton now only need a draw to survive on Saturday, whilst Wickham must win at Torquay and hope results go their way. Stephen Collins, season ticket holder for over 20 years at Bristol Rovers, will be joining us later to talk about their situation. What a win for them at the weekend at Adams Park. In League One, two of Carlisle Tranmere crew and Notts County are going to go down. Sean Derry has masterminded a quite remarkable run. 6 wins in 8 for Notts, including that victory over Carl Swindon at the weekend. They now only need a point at Oldham to survive on Saturday. Stuart Brothers, editor of Notts County's Black and White fanzine, will be coming on to talk to us later. But we are going to start in the Championship, where at the time of recording, 5 sets of fans are still sweating profusely on their futures. Blackpool, Charlton, Millwall, Doncaster, and at the time of recording, Birmingham City are not yet safe. And this is where it gets complicated. 2 big games on Tuesday night this week. Charlton against Watford and Birmingham against Wigan. Apologies if you're listening to this after Tuesday night, but do so safe in the knowledge of what we've predicted here is about to be completely wrong. Basically, a win for Charlton at home to Watford on Tuesday means they stay up. Anything else, it goes to the last day for them. A win for Birmingham against Wigan, and they will probably probably stay up too. But they haven't won in 17 games at St Andrews. The latest, that 3-1 defeat to Leeds on Saturday. And of course, all the off-the-field stuff as well, with Carson Young found guilty recently of money laundering. Let's speak to a man who was out in Hong Kong for that trial, and he writes the very popular Birmingham City blog, Often Partisan. It is Mr Daniel Ivory, and we're pleased to say that Daniel is on the line right now. Dan, thank you very much for coming on the show. You wrote on the blog after the game at the weekend that you believe you're going to go down now. If you do, will it be the lowest moment you've experienced as a Blues fan?
I don't think it'll be precisely the lowest moment. We've been down to the third tier a couple of times before, back at the end of the 80s and the early 90s. I was only a kid then, so I didn't really feel it as much. But it's kind of different now, because back then football was dying in some ways. You know, you had crowds of 6,000 at St Andrews. There was the offences weren't quite down after Hillsborough. It was a horrible, horrible time to be a football fan, I think. And it wasn't as bad to be in the third tier, because, you know, the first and second tiers weren't that great shapes. These days, we're going to miss out on a lot if we fall down to the third tier. You know, we're going to lose more money from TV rights and that. And it's a massive fall from grace, bearing in mind we won the League Cup 3 years ago.
Dan, you've fallen into the relegation zone for the first time this season, possibly the worst time to do it. I mean, the big question really when looking at your position has to be about the home form. Just 2 wins at home all season, which is the worst record in the entire football league. Nine defeats in the last 11 at home, you know, the last win coming way back in October. What on earth has been going on at St Andrews?
I wish I knew. It's the worst, our worst ever home season, regardless of the result on Tuesday. It's the worst ever home league sequence in the second tier. I think it might be in the league as well, but I'm not sure. It's just been bad. I mean, it's got to the point where there were jokes that Lee Clark was using the spare lottery machine and a spare set of balls to pick the team, but he's become increasingly erratic. He really has. And, you know, you just don't know before the game what you're going to get. You know, it comes to the point where every week, you know, there's going to be a bonus ball selection of some player who's been forgotten or who's been out of the picture for so long, who's just been thrown in to try and break the hoodoo. You know, they've tried training at St Andrews. They've tried, like, catching a coach there, staying in the hotel the night before. The fact is, our players aren't very good. Our manager isn't very good. And sometimes it's been a case of, you know, we've been beaten by better teams. Sometimes it's been a case of we've had moments of madness, and then there's been some, the Blackburn game in particular, when he picked 5 players out of position, well, you're hamstrung from the start. What do you do?
Have the fans been, sort of, as this run has got worse and worse at home, what have the fans been like? I mean, has it affected them? Have they tried to get behind the team, or have they been kind of as nervous and that's translated to the players?
I think the problem is, things are very apathetic down St Andrews at the moment. The fans do try and get behind the team, particularly away from home, and I think that's why we've played better away from home. But, you know, the longer the run's gone on, the longer it's been since we've seen a win at home, all the stuff going on off the field, you know, we all know that the club's slowly going down the toilet financially. We know it needs to be sold. It doesn't seem to be happening anytime fast. And I think all that kind of... people have just given up caring on the terraces. People have drifted away, the crowds have dropped, and it's mirrored what's happened on the pitch. So, you know, the crowd have got a big part to play, but I don't, you know, as much as I think that the crowd have got to get behind the team, I can't blame anyone for not getting, you know, for not wanting to, because right now it's just, St Andrews is just like it's under a toxic cloud. It's horrible.
Lee Clark's talked about it being one of his most lowest moments. Are you surprised he's actually still there, or would have sacking him kind of worsen things, if it's possible to indeed worsen things as they stand at St Andrews at the moment?
What it comes down to is the club can't afford to sack him.
Right.
Lee Clark is one of the safest jobs in football because the club cannot afford to sack him. At the start of the season, it wasn't public knowledge, but it was that we were paying at the most $5,000 a week to new players. Wage bill is the second lowest in the division. It's this year to take out Nikola Zigic and his $65,000 a week wages. You know, we cannot afford any. We can't afford to bring in new players. We can't afford to change our manager. I think if we had new owners, then yeah, Clark would be gone. But we wouldn't have had Clark for this long in the first place. So it's symptomatic. The whole thing is symptomatic of the malaise we're in.
Dan, I just want to ask you about the recent comments from captain Paul Robinson, who has quite surprisingly sort of broken ranks with from within the dressing room and criticised the second batch of loan players that have arrived at Birmingham in January. There was a number of loan players in the first half of this season, you know, players like Dan Byrne, Kyle Bartley, Jesse Lingard, some of which had a decent impact for you. But the second lot, Albert Rusnak, Emma Hughes, Federico Makeda, he's actually scored goals, but the rest of them probably leave a lot to be desired. Jordan Ide, Tom Thorpe and Tyler Blackett. He's really criticised them and said basically that they, you know, they're not giving 100%. I mean, is that a fair reflection of their contribution?
I think you have to take those remarks into context of what he said. I understand, again, it's not public domain, but there are whisperings, there is this stuff that's gone on off the field, on the training pitch, that maybe they aren't giving 100%. I don't know. I don't watch them train, so I can't comment on that. What I would say is that, as a soundbite, it was completely ill-advised, especially bearing in mind that Paul Robinson was serving the second match of a three-match ban against Leeds. His third ban of the season for picking up 15
he's
yellow
made,
cards.
Made a career of that.
I was about to say.
Which I believe is a championship high for this season.
Breaking records all over the place.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is it, you know. Like, I can understand where he's coming from in that, you know, he's saying that there's been rumours of people not coming into training on time and stuff like that. But I've actually got to the point now where I don't care if a player comes into training wearing a pink tutu proclaiming that they're the fairy queen of Wonderland if they're going to score a goal on Saturday. You know, I don't think the training pitch matters anymore. I honestly don't. Peter Lovenkrantz has apparently been ripping it off in training, but he cannot do it on the pitch. So what difference does it make, you know, if he's scoring like Lionel Messi on West Hills? Well, you know, if he looks like, you know, Lionel Blair at St Andrews.
A word of optimism, perhaps. Doncaster, one point above you, and a much worse goal difference, go to Leicester on the last day of the season. Now, that might mean that you only need one point from your last two games to stay up. Is that achievable? Wigan at home and Blackburn away. Bolton away.
As an adage of that, Wigan have never actually won at Birmingham.
It's true. Wigan have never beaten us in eight attempts at Birmingham.
It's the first time.
And then Bolton away the last day.
Yeah. I don't know. The pessimistic side of me says we're not going to get another point this season, honestly. Is one point enough? Doncaster are probably the only team in the division with a worse form record than ours at the moment. Leicester are flying. Leicester after 100 points, so we'll see Doncaster probably turning them over just to annoy us. I think what it does, it comes down to the Wigan game. If we win against Wigan and Charlton lose, we're actually mathematically safe, bizarrely enough, because Charlton and Blackpool will play each other on a Saturday and both of them won't be able to
overtake. So ironically, by the time some people might be listening to this, you might actually be safe and all this is irrelevant.
That's how bizarre this division has been. However, despite the fact that Wigan have not beaten us ever at St Andrews, there's always a first time. No one had ever gone 17 home games without winning in the championship, but we managed it this year. So, you know, I'm sure we can make it 18 if we really try hard enough. And then Bolton, last game of the season, we haven't won away there since 2003. We nicked it 1-0. Mikael Forsell scored. I remember being there. I remember nearly getting beaten up on the in the minibus back to a social club in Bolton on the way back because one of the lads couldn't keep their mouth shut and kept asking the Bolton fans if they thought the better team had won it. It was rather humorous. I don't know. I think it really does come down to Tuesday night. If we can get 3 points, then that's it. It's in our hands. If we get one, it's still technically in our hands. You know, as long as we better any of the teams around us, result-wise, we're okay. What I'm worried about is that I think we won't win. I think we'll lose. And I think we'll go into the last game of the season needing all the teams around us to do something, and they won't. We're going to sell out. It's going to be like 3,500 Blues fans there, most of them in fancy dress, and I think they're just going to celebrate being relegated and going, oh, well, we don't care.
Dan, I know you said that Lee Clark's got the safest job in the Football League, and that may well be the case, but I can't just a question on Lee Clark. I can't help but think that sometimes perhaps sort of the thing to maybe most admire about him is also maybe his biggest weakness in. He obviously cares so much, and he's a very passionate and emotional guy. But when you're losing games, it seems to affect him so badly that surely that's got to be a negative thing for the squad. You want someone when the times are hard to, you know, be tough and be resolute and inspire you to carry on and get some performances. Where he looks like, you know, he's needs to be on suicide watch at the end of every defeat.
Yeah, the passion, P-A-S-H-U-N, yeah. That gets referred to a lot by Birmingham City fans on message boards and social media. And he does care. He's got a fantastic work ethic. I've never seen a manager go to as many reserve games, as many academy games, who cares so much about the infrastructure, about looking at younger players and all that sort of thing. And to be fair to him, he really, really, really does care. But like you say, he's so erratic. And he really, you know, you see him twitching. You see him kind of like looking all over, not the interviewer after a game. And you can tell he's hurting. And like, there's been quite a few games where he's not spoken to the press afterwards, you know, because I think because he can't control himself. You know, so he's just a rough boy from the rough east end of Newcastle, to use his words. It's just the way he is.
Dan, before we let you go, you were out in Hong Kong during the trial of Carson Young, and you've written a book on it, which is going to be released next month. Tell us a bit more.
Yeah, I've been out to Hong Kong four times, as it happens. I followed the trial. I've got some fairly extensive contacts out there. I met with people involved in the judiciary system, people involved in his defence team, people who knew him from Birmingham Sasser Holdings and from his personal life. And the book's about him, about what he did, how he became Birmingham City's owner, you know, all the stuff that we didn't really know, and basically where it all went wrong and what lessons we can learn from that, because I think that's the biggest thing we need to understand is why it went wrong.
So it's called Haircuts and League Cups, and it's out at the end of May, yeah?
Yeah.
Great stuff. Daniel, thanks very much for coming on. Try and enjoy this last few days if you can, mate.
I will do, don't worry.
Take care, buddy. That's Daniel Ivory from the Often Partisan Birmingham City blog, which you can read at oftenpartisan.co.uk. And I just mentioned it to Daniel there, DC. Should Birmingham manage to get one solitary point, might their salvation come in the form of that game Donny away at Leicester, and with their goal difference as well? Ouch.
Yeah, well, you know, normally you'd look at that and think, well, Doncaster, you know, fighting in the thick of a relegation battle, Leicester long since having confirmed their promotion, but Leicester haven't let up, have they? Apart from that initial defeat to Brighton, they've looked good in every game since, and they also want to get over they've won 99 points at the moment, so they'll certainly want to finish the season in treble figures points-wise, which is certainly a magnificent achievement if they do it. So that's not a good fixture for Doncaster to have. I mean, Birmingham, what a unbelievable situation they find themselves in. We've talked about them, and you know, Wigan, after looking like they've had fifth place sort of sealed up for quite some time, they've just had a little bad run at right at the worst moment. I mean, I can't believe when I saw the scores coming in from the DW on Saturday.
Oh, what a result for Blackpool.
So bad, haven't they? And then to win 2-0, I mean, what and the moment that they'll look back on surely is that penalty
what
save.
What a save it was.
That was a magnificent save. That wasn't a bad penalty.
He hit Matt Jilks, brilliant,
you know,
save.
Decent pace on it. It was in the corner, and Jilks, he's not just got a hand to it. He has absolutely batted that away, and it's gone out for miles. It was a superb save, and that looked like it gave him the springboard to go on. And
great header
goals
from Keogh, wasn't there, for
absolutely
the first goal, and then Dobby as well, making it 2-0. The first time that Blackpool have scored more than one goal in a game for 6 months.
Well, it's not a bad time to start doing it, is it? And Dobby is a player that has often sort of featured in the playoffs sort of over the last few years, isn't he, for Swansea, for Blackpool, for Palace, Brighton. He's been all those teams, but he is a player that's got great technique, and that was a difficult chance there. And if you were going into the football cliches handbook of how to describe, that was very much a guided volley into the net, wasn't it? A lot of players would swing at that and try and blast it in, but he just side-footed it on the half volley, and it was a really good take, and that was the winning goal.
And perhaps on the opposite end of the scale, it was kind of a fluke, wasn't it? The Millwall equaliser at QPR, kind of mishit, looped up in the top corner. But Carl, that is a vital point for Millwall. They've got Bournemouth at home in their final game. Looking at that table, do you think they're going to have enough to survive?
How do you predict this? We've learned that we just can't predict anything, really, can we? I think it's Doncaster who will take that third place. I really do. I think, as David's already mentioned, Leicester will probably sell out the King Power. And
they're getting the trophy afterwards, aren't they?
Have a party, and they will score quite a few goals, you'd like to think. Nigel Pearson.
Paul Dickoff back at his old club.
G-ing them up. Birmingham, surely they'll get something out of one of those two games, and obviously they've got a much better goal difference, which will help them. For me, it'll be Doncaster.
Charlton need a win at home as well, ideally against your lot on Tuesday night. Four defeats in their last six at home, and then if not, they go to Blackpool on the final day. That could still be there could still be a twist there as well.
We're such a strange team, really, this season. You'd think that they should and would beat us on Tuesday night, given the magnitude of the game for them and the fact that we can't now, you know, mathematically, we can't get in the playoffs. We're now bottom half. But, you know, such is the strangeness of our season, we may well, you know, beat them by a few goals. You wouldn't rule it out at this stage at all.
Right, well, 12:15 on Saturday is when it all plays out, the last day of the Championship season. Now, though, we're going to turn our attention to League One, where the Magpies are flying. So Stevenage and Shrewsbury have gone, with two more teams to follow them through the trapdoor to League Two this week. But who will they be? Carlisle United have got two games remaining, two tough games remaining. Crawley away on Tuesday night and Wolves at home on Saturday. They need a minimum of 4 points to have any chance of staying up. Tranmere need at least a draw at home to Bradford, or they're relegated, whilst Crewe have got a tough final game against Preston, but they could stay up if they lose. Clear as mud? Thought so. So one team who have got destiny in their own hands and know exactly what they've got to do, and Notts County, after this incredible run of 6 wins in their last 8 games, Notts need only a point at Boundary Park against Oldham on Saturday to complete the great escape. What a turnaround under the guidance of Sean Derry. They won 2-0 against playoff chasing Swindon on Saturday, prompting those jubilant scenes at Meadow Lane. And one man who was there, as ever, was Stuart Brothers, editor of Notts County's Black and White fanzine, and we're pleased to say that Stuart joins us on the show right now. Stu, thank you very much for coming on. Are you starting to count your chickens yet, or are you still feeling a little bit nervous ahead of the weekend?
No, the way the season's gone, still very nervous. The odds are certainly stacked in our favour, but the way the season's gone, I can't quite believe we're in this position.
I mean, it's been a really difficult time for Sean Derry, you know, to take on his first job in management, you know, still registered as a player, even though he couldn't have played for you because of the amount of clubs he's already played for this season. And it seems that it's been up and down. You've gone on this, you know, this giving yourselves a great chance of getting out of it on the last day with some really important victories lately. But there has been times, and we've talked about you over the last 3 or 4 months, where you've, at times you've looked dead and buried, then you've had a little fight back, then you've lost a couple again. So it's been really up and down. And how's he done, do you think? And how's he coped with the difficulties of the job?
I think it's taken a while, admittedly, but it appears that now he's found his feet. He's shipped out the dead wood, the wasters that we had on the books. And he appears to able to call on a group of players now who are prepared to run through walls for him. Like I say, it took a while. I mean, we had a little turnaround in form at the start of the year, and then it just seemed to get worse. I mean, some games were worse than under those that we had with Kiwanya. But I think it was about 8 games ago now, we played Tranmere away. We had to win that game, and we lost. And at the final whistle, players dropped to their knees, and we knew as well as they did that we were dead and buried. We were bottom, 7 points adrift at the time. So to find us in this position, going into the final game with only 1 point needed, I mean,
dreamland.
It's incredible. I mean, Derry has worked miracles because, I mean, I think as a whole, we hold the players very much responsible for the state that we were in, but they have really turned it on these last 2 months to sort of give us a chance that we've got on Saturday. It's quite incredible.
And who have been the key players in this turnaround then?
So many. Sean Derry has made a colossus out of Jamal Campbell-Rice. Such an indifferent player for us under several managers, but the form he has been in, teams, they've just got no answer for him. On the other side of the pitch, we've had on loan this season, Jack Grealish from Aston Villa. He started off, you know, you could see he was a good player, there was a good player there. But the speed at which he has matured over the last, I mean, even 2 or 3 months, I mean, he's been outstanding. And we're going to be watching his career with great pride because he's going to be a star. Ronan Murray spent a few months in our development squad and he's been vital with his goals. And big mention for Jimmy Spencer, about as uninspiring a sign-in as you can imagine on the loan deadline day. It didn't get anyone sort of excited, but this guy is just incredible. I mean, I've never seen a player in the lower leagues that the ball sticks to the way it does with Jimmy. He just plucks balls out of the air. He just makes football look so easy. And if I can mention two more, I mean, Hayden Hollis raised a few eyebrows in the last summer when we offered him a 3-year contract. He hadn't looked the best, but he's chipped in with his goals and just a no-nonsense defender. He's probably what we've needed all season long. It's just took so long to find him. And I think finally Hayden Mullins, I mean, we've just lost him to Birmingham today. He's gone back there. So that's a bit of a blow going into Saturday. But we signed as a midfielder, but he's done a great job at centre-back. And can I mention one more?
Name the whole squad if you want, mate.
It is the whole squad.
It sounds that way, yeah. But another one is Alan Sheehan. You know, he's been around the blocks. He's been a good player for Notts, but this season he has been outstanding. He's really served as well. Even covering at centre-back, it appeared to me that was his best position. And he was on the verge of leaving last summer, and very few people would have minded if he went, but he's out of contract this summer and we're all desperate for him to stay, and we all want him to represent, to be the captain next season, basically.
And he was he's the only Notts County player that was given an honourable mention in the recent 442 best top 50 players in the Football League. He got your slot, you mentioned in that. But you've named all those players, and I was just waiting for you there, Stuart, to name one in particular, and you didn't mention him. And that's Callum McGregor, who is being a top scorer this season on loan from Celtic.
Massive, massive fan of Callum. For the sort of miserable first few months of the season, he looked to be sort of the star man. It was his goals that were keeping us in the fight, really. His loan expired with us. It was him and Grealish. Their six-month loans expired. Grealish was sewn up quite quickly, but there was a hold-up at Celtic's end with McGregor. Basically then, our run of form, we started really getting going. Whilst his loan had ended, he still stuck around the club. He still went training. He'd be around the ground. He was fiercely loyal to us, which you don't see much these days. And I can't credit the guy enough for that. Just unfortunately, we hit form, brought him back into the team, and the system that we'd found without him, we lost that. We lost that shape, and trying to accommodate him, we lost our way a bit, and he's sort of been a bit part player towards this, since falling out of the side. And we're all so happy for him when he got that second goal on Saturday.
Stuart, I can't help but feel, with all this pontificating about how great your team is, you do still sit 19th in the table. You've got an excellent home record. You won 5 in a row. But there must be a extreme source of frustration about perhaps what might have been this season then. Where has it actually gone wrong?
It's quite simple in that we should never have appointed Chris Kouamia at the tail end of last season. He came in and I think his record was a defeat, 2 draws and a win. And it just felt at the time that the moment he got a win under his name that he was going to be given the job. And we beat Bury 4-1 on a Friday night. And I think the announcement...
Remember it well.
Then,
I was live on telly as well.
It was, yeah. And it was 4-1. It wasn't that outstanding a game. We were very, very lucky. I'm not going to turn my nose up at 4-1. But, and he got the job a couple of days later. And it was like, okay, you know, we'll see how it goes. Fast forward into the summer, we signed Danny Haynes, which a lot of people were delighted with. There was, as this season started to drag along, there was a clear respect issue. There was a game in the Johnson's Paint. We sat quite close down to pitch level, and Kouamia was barking instructions at Joss Labadie. He said, Joss. And Labadie turns around, and the look he gets, it's not something I'll ever forget. He turned around with this complete look of disdain, and that... There was no really coming back. You saw a sense that, you know, he's not going to win these players over. We lost 5-1 to Leyton Orient. And a couple of days later, Dean Leacock was on local radio and he says, we all had a meeting. We decided we've got to start playing. And I was like, all right, OK, cheers, Dino.
Good.
Thanks for that, mate.
And, it's happened at last.
Yeah. And they had this meeting behind Kouamia's back as well. And, he wasn't management material, but he was certainly let down massively by his players. And, I think basically a lot of the players have sort of... it took a while for them to come around to Derry and Abbott. I mean, we got there eventually. And I say he's got rid of the dead wood, the players that didn't want to be around, and players that have done nothing for us all season, mostly. So, I'm sure if we started the season with Derry... Yeah, we'd be in a much, much sort of rosier position than we are now.
But you're not, and as Carl said, you go into the last game with still a chance that you could be relegated. Just looking at some of the stats, it might allude to why you are where you are. You had the busiest defence in the entire league You face on average 14 shots a game. And you've also had the second lowest share of possible points from losing positions. So you don't do very well when you concede sort of the first goal or when you go behind. So, you know, it's going to be crucial that you get out there and really get at them on Saturday and, you know, take on a team who haven't got anything to play for and try and go at them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the quite scary statistic is that there's still no one in the Football League that's lost more games than us this season. To be even contemplating staying in League One this year, it's just one of these things I can't get my head around. we say that about falling behind, we have done. I think that's another thing that has started to turn around lately. Bristol City, I think it was last week. I mean, it's the best I've seen us play in years. I mean, I know we lost a game, but we played absolutely brilliantly. We came back in that game, and it was only a complete cock up in defence that sort of cost us the game. And then a week later to Port Vale, 2-0 down. I mean, just barely a few weeks ago, we'd have got an absolute caning in that game. But to come back and win 4-2, I mean, it's not so much the winning, but the ways in which we have won lately. We've been so determined in it. It's won a lot of supporters back. There's a real sense that even if we've gone behind now, that we'll still put up a fight. I don't sort of read too much into all them not having anything to play for. If that was me, I mean, we had nothing to play for on the last day of last season, but you still pay your money, you want your players to perform. So I sort of hope that our players don't, I'm sure they won't, Derry and Abbott will not allow that to happen, but I hope there's no complacency in the team.
You're going to stay up? I'm going to try and make you give a prediction. You wouldn't. Thanks for coming on, Stu. Hope it all goes to plan on Saturday. Enjoy the summer. That is Stuart Brothers, who's the editor of Notts County's Black and White fanzine. As for the other sides down there, DC, what a grim situation for Carlisle. 1-0 defeat at home to Oldham on Saturday. Now need, as I mentioned, a minimum of 4 points from Crawley and Wolves away. It looks like curtains for them.
Yeah, it could well be. And we were talking recently to John McGee from the writer for The Two Unfortunates, who's a big Carlisle fan, and you know, he didn't have much good to say about the season. Some initial promise, I think, from Graham Kavanagh looked like he might be, you know, a good thing for Carlisle, but they've not managed to kick on. They're still right in the thick of it. Just a few of their sort of telling stats is that they've actually used 47 different players this season, which is the most of any squad in the entire Football League. The average is 32. So they're well up there, and that can't help when you're trying to build a consistent squad.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think you have to say Carlisle are doomed again. Happy to be proved wrong, but given how poor they've been, they've got two away games there as well. They've been terrible away from home. They're not scoring any goals. It would be a miracle.
And Gary Medine, of course, who's come back to them on loan from Sheffield Wednesday after being released from prison, can't play because he's got a 7 o'clock curfew. So that's another nightmare to add to the situation. I do not think there's any way back for Carlisle United this season. So if they are going to go down, be it on Tuesday or on Saturday, there's one more spot to be filled. Crewe got their necks just above water at the minute. 0-0 draw at Bristol City. Had a great chance, Matt Tootle late on, to win it for them. But a point there. Tranmere, who with that 3-2 win over Notts County a few weeks ago, we thought maybe they're, you know, going to get out of trouble. They're back in the relegation zone. They lost 2-0 away at Leyton Orient at the weekend, so it's looking bleak for them. They have got Bradford at home, though, on the final day, which Bradford, again, nothing to play for, and that is a better fixture than Crewe, who've got Preston at home.
Absolutely. Preston will want to go into playoffs with some momentum. Tranmere conceded 15 goals in the first 15 minutes of matches, which is the highest in the entire Football League, so Bradford will certainly be looking to make a good start against them, and Tranmere, they need to hold out, and this is a massive game for them. And Crewe, they have conceded 3 or more goals 13 times this season. So, I mean, you can see why both these teams are down there.
Well, the goal difference is so tight as well. So, say if Crewe were to lose at home to Preston and Tranmere drew, then Tranmere would stay up. It's that simple. So, everyone at Gresty Road, everyone at Prenton Park on Saturday, radios by your ears.
I think John McMahon, who of course is in caretaker charge, I thought you have to call them interim managers now, but you can be called caretaker in the lower leagues, has said they're in the worst scenario, and given Tranmere's season, particularly as it's gone on, I wouldn't be surprised if they do go down, I'm afraid.
Okay, well, we'll see how that ends up. 5 o'clock Saturday, we'll analyse it all on the show next week. In just a second, though, it is time to focus on League Two. The goals have gone down, but the question is, who's going to join them? So when it came to the crunch, Bristol Rovers finally turned it on. Wickham 1, Bristol Rovers 2 at Adams Park on Saturday. Goals from Lee Brown and David Clarkson mean that a point against Mansfield at the Memorial Ground this Saturday will extend that 94-year run in the Football League for at least one more season. And it did look like absolute pandemonium, didn't it, behind that goal, when that winning goal went in, particularly the fat fella who managed to slip.
Absolutely brilliant. No pitch evasion is complete without somebody royally stacking it. And not only did he do that, he took out one of the Bristol Rovers players in the act. Fantastic.
Absolutely brilliant. On the line right now to speak to us is Stephen Collins, who's been a season ticket holder for over 20 years at Bristol Rovers. And Steve, firstly, thanks very much for coming on the show. Secondly, how crucial were those 3 points picked up at the weekend?
Absolutely amazing. We know from what's gone before with the likes of Luton how long they took to come round. You've seen what happened to Oxford in recent seasons, both former League Cup winners who've fallen from what was once the first original or the Premiership, now slipped down. You can see what it meant to them. For us, well, just amazing, because we know that when you go down, it's a huge trapdoor to try and climb yourself back out of.
And it was a remarkable win in the circumstances, but even more remarkable when you think that you've actually got the joint worst away record in the entire Football League. Just 2 away wins all season, that being the second, and only 15 goals away from home, which is the second lowest in the entire Football League. So your away record has been truly terrible this season.
Well, I think that's the polite way of putting it. We haven't looked like scoring properly. The team's been set up not to lose as opposed to winning. The team's been set up to try and score 1, maybe 2, but mainly to try and keep the opposition out, which I don't think has helped at all.
Well, I notice you've actually got the best defence in the bottom half of that league. Have things changed since Daryl Clark took over from John Ward at all? Have things progressed at all on the pitch, or have they still been relatively negative?
No, I think Daryl Clark's taken over a team lacking confidence. The team lacked confidence terribly. We had too many players being played out of position. I think, to be fair to Daryl Clark, he's picked up a team struggling. Very rarely a team that went out looking like they were going to win. It was hoofball, and you're rightfully saying that we had a good defensive record. That's the way the team's been set up.
From the outside looking in, with the trouble that you've got and, you know, the peril that you imminently face, it might be tempting to say, well, you know, question whether it was the right time for Daryl Clark to take over the reins from John Ward. But it sounds like you think it was a wise decision, despite the fact that the league performance hasn't really improved.
Well, the team were in freefall. The team have been in freefall. This might be controversial. I personally, whilst John Ward was a good appointment to save the team from the drop, unfortunately, been around like an old fossil for too long to say he was good enough to keep us up, but I'm not surprised where we are now. So personally, I'd have given Daryl Clark the reins at the start of the season and not now. I'd have given him the chance to bring in. He was brought in with non-league experience of players from the lower leagues. I thought they should have last summer recruited players from the lower leagues, players who could score goals. So I think, I think he should have taken it at the start of the season.
Quite strange, isn't it, that in the team of the year, the PFA team of the year that was announced yesterday for League Two, for a side that could still technically get relegated from the Football League, there's actually 2 Bristol Rovers players out of 11 in there, Michael Smith and Jonjo O'Toole. Are you surprised to see them in the team of the year?
Not really. No, I think Michael Smith's an outstanding player. Whether he's still with us at the end of the summer, we'll see. Jonjo O'Toole was tremendous when he came to us at the end of last season. We thought him being signed would actually be part of a building block to push us on for at least the playoffs this season. That was the feeling at the time. A player, Jonjo O'Toole, is certainly capable of playing at a higher league, as is Michael Smith.
And I mean, I suppose it says everything about your season that the fact that Jonjo O'Toole, as good as he's been for you, he's your top scorer from midfield. 13 goals in the league, 15 in all competitions. But you've got the second most wasteful attack in the league. It takes you 10.8 shots to score a goal on average.
So all right, Stato.
So do you think, has there been a problem with the tactics this season, or has there been, you know, just the strikers up front just aren't good enough?
I'd say a bit of both, really. The problem is the game starts at the back, doesn't it? Where you've got a team that's been set up not to lose, there was no real flair or attempt to play attacking football. And if the team's not set up to play attacking football, the strikers get starved of any good ball. The strikers in the club, whether or not they're good enough, well, possibly not, but they weren't given a chance all season.
I'm looking at the situation that he had at the weekend, Stephen, with the pitch invasion, and no doubt about it, that was a massive 3 points to get, you know, in a game against a, you know, your nearest relegation rival. It was huge, but I can't help but, as a Watford fan myself, think back to a situation that we were in last season when we had that incredible pitch invasion at Vicarage Road after we won the playoff semi-final. Ultimately, we didn't finish the job in the next game. And I hate to think that the same thing could happen to you. All those fans going mental, getting on the pitch, brilliant. But you've not stayed up yet. And, you know, you could be left bitterly disappointed if you think that the job's done.
Well, you're right to say that. I don't believe for 1 second the job's done. I think there'll be a sellout, albeit 12,000. The fans will be right behind the team, as they have been all season. I think the team will be set up to go and win the game. I don't think for 1 second they're not looking for a draw. I don't think for 1 second they're looking for a draw. Northampton, what a fantastic run they've had. Fantastic. I mean, they were dead and buried, weren't they? And they did a wonderful job. It's how good Wickham are going to perform away from home. They themselves have also, like Rovers, have been in freefall. So Torquay, they won't want to disappoint. They've had a very good run themselves, good win for them at the weekend. They want to go out on a high. I think Wickham have, not because I think Rovers are going to win, I think Wickham will do well to get more than a draw at Torquay, and I think that's probably going to keep us up more so than our own result.
Do you think so? Because like, this is your biggest game in a long, long time. You've got to stay in the Football League. You're playing a team with nothing to play for at home, a full house. If you can't rely on yourself in this situation, there's big trouble.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I'd like to say we're going to win the game, and everyone, every gasp will be there. I shall mention that we've got some. I know that I actually live in Liverpool supporting the Rovers. I'm bringing 12 Scousers down who I've made Rovers their second team. So on the one hand, you've got Liverpool and Everton having a great season, but the 12 coming down of Rovers as their second team. In fact, in the Liverpool factory, we virtually have the Rovers team group on the wall. So we've got backing from positive spirits.
Well, let's hope there's no Steven Gerrard type slip-ups. Steve, let's just for a second, as much as you'd be hesitant to do so, imagine the worst happens and you do manage to get relegated at the weekend. What would the picture be like for Bristol Rovers in non-league? I know you've got a new stadium on the horizon. You're, you know, relatively big club for the, you know, certainly, you know, Bristol's a big city, although you've been left trailing in the wake of your city rivals in recent seasons. But what's the future like if you were in non-league?
Well, frightening, isn't it? You've only got to see the likes of poor Stockport County. You know, they were once sort of like a current championship team at one, not that long ago.
They were.
And they've gone down to, I think it's Conference North. Anything can happen. It's frightening. I mean, nobody wants to drop. No one wants to drop. So we all know it's hard to get out. You know, said the likes of Luton Town, it took them a long time. Oxford have been down, both League Cup winners. So teams with better pedigree, bigger pedigree than Rovers have taken a long time to get back. So it's frightening. Any Football League team does not want to go out the league.
Exactly. Well, let's hope for your sake and the sake of those Scousers making a long journey down to Bristol that you stay up on Saturday.
Of course, I would tell them it's like this every game if we win. It's a big party.
Well, best of luck for Saturday. Thanks for coming on, Steve. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much indeed.
That is Stephen Collins, who's been a season ticket holder at the Memorial Ground for over 20 years now, lives in Liverpool. Steve hinted at it there, though. Wickham have been in free fall, and Carl, whatever way you look at it, Wickham are right in the mire now. They need to win and hope other results go their way. It's looking bleak.
You're quite right. It is looking very, very bleak. And this is probably the scenario which sets itself up best because they're 3 points behind, so they must win. Gareth Ainsworth talks about playing himself, I note, as well. He's been quoted, which perhaps does reek of desperation somewhat. But this is the kind of scenario where you can see Wickham, if they do indeed win, and Bristol Rovers and Northampton are losing by one goal, and the scenarios we talked about at the top of the show, basically about last minute, last day of the season, cliches of a pitch invasion happening, they're staying up, and then there's a late goal at Northampton, for example, an equaliser. I can see that, and I'm hoping that probably does happen.
Well, I don't know what you think, DC, but I just can't see Northampton slipping up now. They've done so well. 3-0 win away at Dagenham on Saturday. Absolutely fantastic. Ivan Toney, the overhead kick, 18 years old. What a goal. I just think Oxford at home, Oxford have lost 6 in 7. They're absolute pants at the minute. I just think Northampton have got more than enough to stay up. So I do worry for Wickham.
I'd agree with you there. I mean, it wouldn't be unlike, I mean, you know,
football,
exactly,
generally.
for them to have that great run and then to mess it up on the last day. I mean, the thing is, what you've got to take into account with all these things, you look at form, you look at stats, you look at momentum and all this stuff,
It's one game of football. There isn't a chance next week to make it right. It's now or never, you know, in the truest sense. And that will do things to players. It, some of those players will take that and will relish it and will, you know, perform in the heat of the moment. Others may well crumble. You know, the fans are going to be nervous. They'll be behind, you know, all the fans will be behind all their clubs. But like you say, when they hear goals coming through or they hear, you know, maybe phantom goals on Twitter and stuff that aren't true, you know, that has got to transmit to the players, surely. I mean, as a manager, do you inform your players of developments at other matches, or do you want them to focus on the game? I mean, the manager could be on the pitch for Wickham, as you've just said. Yeah. So the emotions and tensions and the mental challenge is going to be immense on Saturday. And that is going to have a big part to play, even if you're playing a team like Oxford, who have been terrible.
Lest we forget, Northampton's manager is, of course, Chris Wilder, former Oxford manager. And absolutely. Oxford fans who haven't got anything to play for, I'm probably sure would love it if they end up beating Northampton and eventually Chris Wilder.
Torquay themselves, and we'll talk about them in a few more minutes' time, the fact they've gone down and have been on quite a good run recently. So it's quite a tough game for Wickham just to go there and get a win. But the thing about Wickham is, you say Ainsworth from the pitch, he knows they have to win. They don't win, they're down. So it's not as if he needs to be worrying about results from elsewhere. He's just got to concentrate on the job and get it done. So anyway, one of those sides is going to be dropping out of the Football League. It's the worst kind of relegation, and we're going to lose one of them from the Football League inside the next week. We'll talk about that on the show next week. Right, okay, before we round up what else has been going on, we are going to have a little another edition of My Club here. It's the bit of the show where we celebrate 125 years of the Football League by getting a fan on to talk about their club in 125 seconds. And this week, we're going to focus on Blackpool.
This is We Are Going Up. My club in 125 seconds.
Hello, I'm Jack Critchley, and my club are Blackpool.
So, Jack, do you remember your first ever trip to Bloomfield Road? Tell us all about it.
Yeah, my first trip involved taking a friend with me from school, and it was against Lincoln. It was when we were in Division 2 at the time. And around about 30 minutes, nature called for this particular friend, and we all went off to go and find where the toilets were, heard the crowd go wild, and that was the only goal of the game, a header from a young Danny Shittu.
What tremendous.
But I still went back for more.
So you missed that goal, but do you remember the first ever goal that you actually saw?
Yeah, it took a while, because the second match I went to was a 0-0 draw with Bournemouth. I think I got third time lucky, and I think we scraped a 1-0 win against Peterborough, I think it was. It was Tony Ellis scored the goal.
I was going to say, who scored it? Who has been your favourite player, though?
There's plenty of contenders for this. I mean, Charlie Adams, an obvious one for the resurgence that he gave the side in the Championship. And Keith Southern as well for his wholehearted tackles. But I've always had a soft spot, and I've no reason, I don't know why, for Gary Taylor Fletcher, who I believe we should never have let go to Leicester at the end of the season.
He's getting another promotion on his CV, isn't he, this year?
He's going to give the Premier League another crack, and I just wish it was with us.
Okay, right, onto the real business. Who's the worst ever Blackpool player you've seen in your life?
Again, plenty of contenders, probably more than the previous question. We had Shefty Coochie's brother, who I think was called Nafty Coochie. And that first name was entirely appropriate because he appeared to fall over his own legs, or at least lose where the ball was. Although he did move to Serbia soon after and was the top scorer for about 3 years running in the division.
Did he do the famous celebration when he scored, like his brother?
We never got to find out. He did it without the ball at his feet, though, several times.
And most importantly, Jack, are you going to stay up this season?
If we'd done this 7 days previously, I would have said no. After a surprise victory against Wigan, I think we might. I think Birmingham might be the architects of their own downfall, and we might stay up as a result.
Jack, your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much. Good luck for Saturday.
Thank you very much.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
Cheers, Jack. There will be another My Club along next week. Just 4 more shows. Starting to panic now about how we're going to fit everyone in.
Yeah. Should we read out those clubs that we still need?
If you want to get in touch, at Wagyu Podcast or wearegoingup.co.uk/contact. Do you actually want to read them out or not?
Well, we might as well.
Okay, right. Let me scroll down. I've got it on here somewhere. So we still need Accrington, Birmingham, Bolton, Brighton, Burton, Cheltenham, Cove, Crawley, Crewe, Dagenham, Derby, Doncaster's at your phone, Exeter, Fleetwood, Gills, Hartlepool, Leeds, Mansfield, Borough, Millwall, MK Dons, Newport, Northampton Forest, Notts County, Plymouth, Preston, Dale, Sheffield Wednesday, Swindon, Walsall, Wigan and York.
You better get tweeting, Mark.
Why me? You do it. Okay, right.
It's your idea.
Top of the Championship. Well, it was actually. Yeah, top of the Championship then. We know that Leicester won at the weekend. They are going to get to 100 points if they get a draw against Doncaster. They're going to receive the trophy on Sunday. Burnley won again as well. In the playoffs, Derby's great form continues. They beat Watford 4-1, 4-2?
They beat us 4-2. Just quickly on Derby, I was having a chat to...
Well, we are going to do a full playoff preview next week, by the way.
Yeah, I was having a quick chat on Twitter this morning to Owen Bradley, who we had on earlier on in the season, just on Derby. And an interesting point to note is that Will Hughes, the player that everyone's eulogised so much about...
In the team of the year.
Yep, can't get in the team at the moment, which kind of gives you an indication of just how well that midfield is operating at Derby. Craig Bryson, Jeff Hendricks had some good form recently, and George Thorne, who was at Watford earlier in the season, is on loan there from West Brom. And they are looking good. They'd still be my favourites for the playoffs right
Five
now.
Wins in a row, I believe it
and
is.
And to give them a bit of hope, 5 of the last 10 Championship playoff winners have finished third.
Can we just say, by the way, all your stats today have come courtesy of...
That one came from my own diligent hard work.
I'm sure you've picked up on the fact that he's been given out a lot of stats. Ben Mayhew,
the rest
we
of
thank
them
you.
Have come from Ben Mayhew, the faithful league...
Experimental
Football
361.
League statistician. Yeah, follow him on Twitter at Experimental361 or indeed... at Match Story.
Match Story, yeah. QPR in contrast to Derby, just 2 wins in the last 7 after that draw with Millwall. They're going to finish 4th and 5th then. So we've talked about Wigan losing 2-0 at home to Blackpool. Before we go on to who's going to get that final spot, I want one word from you, whichever you want to answer this. One word to describe the season that Bournemouth have had.
Momentum. They're carrying a lot of momentum into next season, I feel.
To go up and play like they've done, I think, been brilliant.
Tremendous.
Ipswich, improvement.
Overachievement.
Yeah, I'd say. I think I'd go with Mark there. They've certainly improved. They've fallen short just at the last second, but they can certainly be pleased with what looks like to be a top 10 finish.
Forest.
Does that count as a word? Just a laugh.
Frustrating, I'd guess.
Yeah, yeah. So those are the sides: Bournemouth, Ipswich, and Forest, who haven't made it. Psycho will be starting life after the World Cup in the Championship, not the Premier League. 2 spots to be decided. We talked obviously a lot about Wigan's game at Birmingham. They finish away at Blackburn, who can still squeeze in there. They need Wigan to lose at Birmingham again in a game that might have already taken place by the time you hear this, and then they need to beat them by 3 goals on the last day for a 6 goal swing. Brighton are away at Forest. Reading are at home to Burnley. What do we reckon, boys? One more game to go. Who's going to get those 2 spots?
Well, it looks like I quite fancy Reading to be in there now, actually. They have seemingly picked up a little bit of momentum after being sort of fairly inconsistent for most of the season, hovering around the end of the playoffs for most of the season, but they kind of dipped out, dipped in, dipped out, dipped in, and they've won a couple of games recently. They're looking a little bit more formidable now. And the reason I'm talking them up is that I've got them in my pre-season 3-team accumulator to go up along with Preston and Burton. So I'm hoping that I can translate some positive vibes to them and they can go up. I do think they'll get one of the spots.
Okay, well, if Reading lose at home to Burnley, it'll only take a draw for Brighton at Forest for Brighton to get in the playoffs for a second successive year.
Wouldn't that be something? Because they've spent a lot of the season outside of the playoffs. So wouldn't that just be football to kick Reading, who have spent quite a lot of the season within it to replace them at the last minute?
Do you see Adam Clayton's blue and white beard for Huddersfield?
Yeah, which I just thought this has gone too far. Somebody needs to hold that man down at the final whistle and shave it off. But I believe it was for charity.
It was.
So fair enough.
Well done to him.
Well done.
Wrong end of the table. We said last week that Yeovil were almost mathematically gone. They have gone after losing at Brighton. Yeah. But what about Barnsley? We went to the Valley to see them a few weeks ago. We thought they'd given themselves hope with that win against Charlton, but it's kind of petered out in the end. And I rewatched the last couple of minutes of the game at Huddersfield on the last day of the season last year, saw the passion and how excited they were to stay up, and it's kind of gone down with a bit of a whimper, really.
Just not good enough in front of goal this season, as we heard from many of those Barnsley fans before the game at the Valley. Danny Wilson said that after the game. He said that maybe getting it to as late on in the season as they did with the chance to stay up should be seen as an achievement, which I thought was a bit of a strange thing to say. But maybe, as with some other clubs in the past, we've seen maybe going down and getting some positive feeling back in the club might be a good thing, because they've been struggling in the Championship for a number of seasons now, and that takes its toll.
A lot of the fans you did speak to and listen to, and they were relatively positive about Danny Wilson being there, whether it's rose-tinted spectacles having come back. But given how amazingly they stayed up last season, I don't think anyone's particularly surprised they've gone this time.
This is the PFA Championship Team of the Year. Kasper Schmeichel, Kieran Trippier, Aaron Cresswell, Wes Morgan, Jason Shackle, Danny Drinkwater, Andy Reid, Craig Bryson, Will Hughes, Danny Ings and Ross McCormack. Not many people would quibble. Well, actually, probably a lot of people would quibble, but then everyone's biased in football.
Burnley and Leicester fans will moan about Sam Vokes not being there and David Nugent not
McCormack,
being there.
McCormack, though, what a season he's had. Absolutely. Unbelievable, yeah, in a struggling team.
Exactly, in a team that, he's been the shining light, in a team desperately average to poor at times of Leeds, so he's done very well.
I mentioned to you this season, Mark, I put my
top goal scorer of Bedon across the league. So I mentioned on, I only did the League One podcast at the start of the season. I had Sam Baldock, I had Ross McCormack. Fortunately, I had Mark Richards at Chesterfield. He scored about seven goals. So
2 out of 3 are bad.
I don't think you can complain too much, to be honest with you. And it'll be interesting to see.
Well, we'd like to hear from you.
Interesting how all these teams have to be 4-4-2. How many of these teams actually play for?
We'd like to hear from you, the listeners. A couple of years ago, we asked you to get in touch with your, I think it was, favourite goal of the season, underrated player of the season, young player of the season, and player of the season. Do we want to do that again?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. All right. I'm just raising the idea. Tweet us at Wagyu Podcast and we'll read some out in the show next week. Your favourite goal of the season, your most underrated player in the Football League, best young player and Football League player of the season. We'll read some of those out next week. League One, Wolves hit the 100 point mark with a 1-0 draw at Coventry. Brentford are on the beach already. They got thrashed at Colchester. And well done to Coventry, we should say. First of all, Stephen Presley's kept them up despite that 10 point deduction. Onwards and upwards. I think the promotion for Rochdale means that Coventry fans have seen the least amount of success or something like that in the last 10 years of any club in the Football League. It was some stat like that I saw doing the rounds on Twitter over the weekend.
Absolutely terrible. They've literally not had one season that they could enjoy since leaving the Premier League all those years ago, and were getting progressively worse with each one. And the big thing for them, I think, now is how many other players that perform well this season stay in the summer, and if indeed does the manager stay. I don't think they have much chance of holding on to any of their star performers, including the manager. So,
and get the club playing in bloody Coventry again,
another
please.
Another reset in the summer, and same old story.
Okay, playoff teams. Rotherham grabbed a point at MK Dons against MK Dons at home in the last minute. Preston won a fifth straight game at home, beating Gillingham. Orient won against Tranmere, and Peterborough have got seventh with a 4-2 win at Shrewsbury, while the nine men of Swindon, Carl, lost at Meadow Lane. So near, but yet so far. Not a bad season again, though.
No, I think any Swindon fan who said they thought they'd be in the playoffs this season would be lying to you. I mean, we could end up eighth, but seventh or eighth would certainly take a decent run in the Johnstone Paint Trophy as well. A lot of people tipped us to go down this season. A lot of bookies had us in the kind of bottom four or five.
I think
five
Dave
teams.
Might have done, actually. I can't remember.
I mean, Mark Cooper's done above and beyond what we're expecting. Problem is, of course, we've got a lot of loanees, and what happens next season could be anyone's guess.
More on the playoffs, playoff teams in League One next week. Shrewsbury, though, DC relegated. I saw that Glyn Price from the Blue and Amber fanzine tweeted the following on Saturday: "Down with a whimper. I'm utterly and totally hashtag angry. I can't believe the applause that the players are getting. We've won only 9 games this season. Mental. Sometimes I wonder. I really do." I think Glenn needs a pint, doesn't he?
Yeah.
After that. Really poor season. From the moment that Turner went, Michael Jackson coming in, it's just not worked.
No, it absolutely hasn't. I'm resisting every single sinew in my body to avoid doing a Michael Jackson based pun here.
But you were the one that stopped me doing it.
I know. Now it's been dreadful, and
it's been bad.
They've got to pick up the pieces and try and have a good season next season.
Seems to think there's going to be a lot of changes over the summer.
Yeah.
I've always hated Shrewsbury since the playoff semi-final in 2009 when they beat us on pens. Yeah. So I'm glad they're down. We'll have you next season. PFA Team of the Year in League One: Carla Kamey, Sam Ricketts, Danny Barr, Harry Maguire, Jake Bidwell, Bakary Sakho, Adam Forshaw, Kevin McDonald, Ben Pringle, Britt Sombalonga, and Callum Wilson of Cov, who's been banging him in.
No complaints. I think, especially all those Wolves players, they've been fantastic, haven't they?
Absolutely.
Callum Wilson missed a couple of months, didn't he? As well, with a shoulder injury. So, I mean, Coventry out dipped away a little bit, but he's done exceptionally well, and as you already mentioned, probably won't be there next year.
Okay, down into League Two then. Congratulations to three clubs who've all gone up over the weekend. Rochdale went up by beating Cheltenham 2-0. Two brilliant goals in that game as well. Chesterfield up with a 2-0 win at Burton. Two from Jay O'Shea, that was on Sunday. Chris Turner, I think he's up in the hierarchy there at Chesterfield, very emotional after the game about Paul Cook and the job he's done. And Russ Wilcox, ironically, 28 games without defeat. They lose and they go up.
Fantastic.
It was always going to happen, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Did you see the Rochdale celebrations?
I did. They were singing Wonderwall, weren't
absolutely.
They?
Absolutely. I mean, tremendous. It was heartwarming.
You really. Weren't a fan of Keith Hill's Chino.
Bloody Christ. Look at him. I know when he was in the championship with Barnsley, he was wearing that jacket, wasn't he? That fashionable jacket, and he had his beard. And now he seems to have taken to wearing just horribly coloured chinos. So he's wearing an awful, just like bright sort of blue pair of chinos, singing along to Wonderwall. But then I was tweeted after bemoaning his fashion sense, and he said, "Oh, you obviously didn't see the pair he was wearing the week before, and they were pink."
I'm going to show you a picture. here on my phone, because one of my mates, obviously I've got a few mates who are Rochdale fans, and we mentioned the other week, didn't we, when we were talking about Brentford going up, the camaraderie between players, and you have to have a drink with the players and the manager. This is a couple of hours after a full time whistle on Saturday. Have a look at that picture there. That's my mate and Keith Hill.
Keith Hill, camera's over here, mate.
Absolutely battered.
We'll post that. We've got to post that up on Twitter.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Keith. I mean, he's well earned celebrations after that game. He's done a very good job going back there. It wasn't necessarily very easy to go back there and recreate the success, but he's done just that.
And Russ Wilcox, greatest manager in the world ever, isn't he? Something like that.
Well, you're only as good as your last game, aren't you?
Very good answer. Playoffs. Fleetwood are going to be in there. They drew with Southend at the weekend. Southend won 5-7. The dream's alive. You said they were going to get relegated. They could still get promoted. It's on.
York as well. York, how incredible was York's run been since
7-1-0 wins in their last 11 games.
I mean, I suppose if
boring,
you look at
boring
the league,
York.
The League Two team of the year, perhaps the only people that might look at it and wonder is... you know, some of the York City defenders, how they haven't got in there, because they perform magnificently.
Well, this is the team of the year. Tommy Lee in goal, Michael Smith, Ian Everett, Liam Cooper, Michael Rose, Jonjo O'Toole, Anthony Sarcevic, Gary Roberts, Ian Anderson, Sam Winnell and Scott Hogan. Do you see the Hartlepool fans dressed as Thunderbirds? Wonderful. Brilliant.
I saw Jeff Stelling with a Thunderbird hat on.
Yes.
Having them Smurfs and Penguins, Thunderbirds this year, absolutely brilliant.
They were all behind the goal.
I wonder if any of them were called like named after the Tracy family.
Virgil
Tracy, a long shot.
Any Hartlepool fans called Virgil, get in touch.
Or John.
Let us know.
Probably more likely, Alan.
A couple of other bits. We said monitor the AFC Wimbledon points deduction situation. 3 points deducted, which is kind of as expected, I think. And I want to say well done to all the Pompey fans who cycled from Portsmouth all the way up to Bury at the weekend, raising money for charity. A 4-all draw. What a game. The home of goals, the JD Stadium. And that is 16 games unbeaten at home since David Flitcroft took over.
Can you remember?
Which is staggering.
Carl, I mentioned this last week, I think. You weren't here. Do you remember when we went up to Nottingham a month or so ago, and we were on the train that day talking to our mates about the various fortunes of our three teams that we support, and that was the day where you were saying to our mates Barry could really go down here. They were 2 points above the relegation zone, and now you're now sitting in 10th place. I mean, you could finish the season ninth position.
The ridiculous nature of
crazy.
League Two all season has been so tight, and Barry.
Well, next season's the season. The chairman's been talking about giving him funds to bring in players.
You said that last year, Mark.
Promotion push.
One player that seems to have caught the eye, Hallam Hope.
Scored a hat-trick, our first league hat-trick since Ian Lawson in 1999. I was there when Ian Lawson scored that hat-trick.
Get him back next season, maybe?
Or Ian Lawson, I think he's retired now. All right, yeah, I hope so, from Everton. Yeah, he's a prospect, only 20. Super Kevin Phillips is retired. It's the end of an era. He's played for every club in the Football League, give or take a few. Do you remember him from his days at Vicarage Road?
Absolutely. He was the first player that I ever saw score a professional goal against Blackburn Rovers in the League Cup in 1996.
But he was also the player that scored the goal, which meant your side didn't go up last season.
Yeah. Swings and roundabouts. No, he's had a tremendous career.
Oh, he's been fantastic.
Came to us from non-league. He was initially at Southampton and they let him go, and as soon as he came to us, you know, you saw that he was going to be a good player.
I remember.
Finisher, and it was Sunderland really when his career.
Yeah, I was
really
about to say.
Off.
I remember in '99,
golden boot across Europe, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Bury were in Division One, and Sunderland won the title that year. And they played us at Gig Lane the night they got promoted on Sky. They won 5-2, and he absolutely tore us to shreds. He was fantastic. That was when him and Quinn had the big man little thing going at the time, and obviously he went on to score 30 odd goals next season.
And I think the most impressive thing about it is, I mean, he was excellent in those early years in his career. As Carl said, golden boot in Europe, you know, perhaps maybe should have got more of a chance at England level.
Absolutely.
At that stage. But I guess there was a time when you thought maybe when he started to fritter around the Midlands clubs, you know, like to Villa, to West Brom, and you think, is his career going to sort of peter out? But the late resurgence in his career, he's managed to keep it going until the age of 40 and play some really crucial parts, you know, in promotions for Blackpool, for Crystal Palace. He's contributed, you know, even not in as big a way, but he's contributed to Leicester City as well. You know, he's done himself proud with the way he's been able to, you know, continuously perform and score goals to the age of 40. It shouldn't be underestimated how difficult that is.
Great man. Well done, Kev. Great career. That is it for this week's show. If you want to get in contact, the Twitter is at Wagyu Podcast. You can also go and read the blogs on the website, wearegoingup.co.uk. SoundCloud, is soundcloud.com/wagyupodcast, and the Audible offer is still there if you want a free audiobook, audible.co.uk/goingup. And remember, if your team is playing a club who've got something on the line this weekend, try and spread a rumour that there's been a goal in one of the games involving the teams up against them, because that's part of the fun of the last day of the season. You looking forward to Saturday?
I am looking forward to Saturday, actually, but not necessarily for the reason that you're alluding to.
All right.
I'm a best man on a stag do on Saturday in Brighton.
Oh, God.
So I'm going to be doing my very best to keep up to abreast of all the developments across the divisions whilst leading a group of merry men around Brighton.
If Brighton make the playoffs, even better. A lot of people out Saturday night.
Absolutely.
And Carl?
Very much. Unfortunately, I won't be doing that, although I will be getting drunk in Manchester. So I'm trying to think now off the top of my head of any teams within the...
Keith Hill will be doing the rounds.
Yeah, Keith Hill. I'll have a pipe with him.
Go find him.
He'll drink me under the table. That's for certain.
We will be back next week with our take on the final weekend of the season.
Good luck, everyone.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.